So start with this. I just want to say as we hit this blend wall, there are a number of options that are out there. And I think the common theme that has been stated here, none of them are inexpensive, and each of them has challenges. E85, I hear it. Yes, we can put more stations, and then you listen to the other side, our customers, the oil companies or whoever's doing retail, they're saying, look, I'm putting it out there, and it's not being bought. So what I'm saying right now is not a viable solution to go ahead and pick up this extra demand that's going to need to be met on the ethanol until we can get more moving, and as that's a desire of the end user to use it. That's what's going to pull it through. Advanced biofuels, there's a substitution in there. It's not likely an economic alternative to regular biofuels and the availability of it. We're not sure if it's going to be available. Biodiesel blending, it is a way to go ahead and cover for those RINs, but similar to that last discussion by Protec, he talked about RINs going up in value on the ethanol side to go ahead and help drive that. Well, these costs are pretty high too. I agree. The costs are going to have to go up to make these solutions viable, and I'm not sure which one's going to win out. I want to at least identify what the likely ones that our customers are coming to us and saying, here's what I think we're going to need to be doing in the next couple of years. And what we commit to is that we will go ahead and invest in the infrastructure to allow them to meet the obligations. The last one is mid-level blends that have been discussed a great deal. What they do is they make step changes in the amount of volume. You go from 10% to 12%, 20%, that's a large amount of volume that has to be handled very quickly at the mark of a pen. So what has to happen in order to make these kind of steps and be able to handle where we're going? What we see as a sweet spot is a number of these hubs that have to be created in the 10,000 to 30,000 barrel a day sweet spot of volume that has to come in of ethanol. You have to be able to receive it, handle it, distribute it, and put automated blending in to be able to move this out. And then that's not just for that market. That's going to be to multiple markets. And you want to reduce the amount of handling every time when that comes in. The ultimate goal would be get it in efficiently by unit train, by pipeline, and then distribute it very quickly to all the distribution locations that need to go. And whether that's by truck or by pipeline, you got to find the most efficient way to do that. But it's going to move towards this. You can't take what we're doing today and add 20 to 50% onto these and just do more of it. We're going to have to find these efficiencies. And you got to be flexible to be able to, the product, be able to handle it from different modes, be able to move it out quicker. All of this has to evolve quickly. These are just what I was kind of hitting on previously. In 2009, some of the specific ethanol projects in our product pipeline group, California made the jump from 5.7, nearly doubling it to 10%, had all the infrastructure in place to be able to make that happen. In the southeast, along our plantation pipeline system, 24 terminals, 14 markets, we now are in each of the markets supported by customers. You still have a couple of locations there that it's not needed today, but we're ready to go ahead and fill that out. And in Florida, we have expanded the storage blending capability, and we have the pipeline moving now, and I'll give a little more detail on that in just a minute. Total ethanol volumes handled. This is a common question. Wanted to go ahead and give an update on that. In 2009, handled about 29% of the total U.S. demand of ethanol through our Kinder Morgan terminals, our product pipelines, each of our facilities around the U.S. Gives you an idea of the scale. And again, as long as that keeps growing, we now count on 95 million barrels as our estimate for 2010. What are we doing to be able to handle those barrels? You just can't turn a switch and expect more. If you had the chance, and I appreciate everybody who took the time out to come out to our terminal about 20 minutes away from here on Monday. We offered tours, drove around the outside, gave a handout that kind of showed them what they're going to be looking at. This was it. It gives an overview of what the terminal is about, but down below you can see the color coding. These are all projects we've just recently completed down in the lower left-hand corner, the two big tanks. Those just came in November and December of 2009. One of them is a 100,000-barrel tank to handle ethanol. With that, we now have the capability of handling 100% of the Orlando demand and greater Orlando demand for ethanol by pipeline. Remember when I said we spoke in February 2009 last year on that? We were moving between 3 and 5% of the Orlando's market by pipeline. By the end of 2009, we were closer to 85% of the Orlando market of ethanol moving by pipeline. The rest is trucks. And we have a little small circle. I know it's tough to see. Down below, we still have the truck capability. Most of that is all shifting over to pipeline, and that's the ultimate goal, to make it as efficient as possible and as cost-effective for our customers. As they shift toward the most cost-effective means, we will be ready for it. I also include in here a biodiesel expansion that we're going out to our customers this first quarter, with the opportunity to be able to blend ethanol with 100% of the ULSD demand that goes through our terminal. We will offer the capability to be able to blend that to a B5 blend. Again, if our customers want it, we will make the investment, and we could have that available by August of 2010 if it moves quickly and it's what the customers want. This is that graphic I was touching on. It shows the very rapid ascent of ethanol blending in the state of Florida. This is the state of Florida. This is the E10 market penetration put forth by Houston Biofuels Consulting. Follows this very closely for us, and it shows you there on the far left at the end of 2007, when this was first being pursued, the state of Florida did not have a specification that allowed for the blending. And then we worked very closely with the state. Our customers wanted to bring it in. The end users wanted it. We were able to bring it in. You can see the very rapid growth that happened in that April 15, 2008, when we offered it at both of our Tampa and Orlando racks. And as you can see, the rest of the state now, we're sitting at 99%, well in advance of the state mandate to be 100% by the end of this year. Updates on pipeline movements of biofuels. Here's just an overview of the two pipelines. We have a 10-inch that moves distillate and jet to Orlando from Tampa, and a 16-inch that moves gasoline and ethanol. And those are the basic markets served by this pipeline. Central Florida started operations in December 2008. I talked to you about its increases on the demand from our customers, but the key hurdles that we've overcome, these batches, we were very, very careful in our 18-month test program, the cleaning of the pipeline to ensure that it was ready and operational, and it would ensure not only that the product remained exactly on spec and as the customers wanted, but the key factor here is we do not want to harm that pipeline. This is the artery that goes ahead and serves the greater Orlando market, and our number one concern is the integrity of that pipeline and maintaining safety of it. And we have had no signs of corrosion during comprehensive testing, which we continue to test not only the product as it comes through, but our pipeline on a regular basis. And we are now sending smart pigs through that as well to continue and enhance our testing process. As we've learned from all this work that we've done on the Central Florida pipeline, what I talked about last year was now we're going to take that knowledge and apply it in different areas or different areas of the country. Kinder Morgan owns 18,000 miles of refined products pipeline. We don't propose that every pipeline is capable or should carry ethanol. But what we do want to determine is look for the ones that have a need. When our customers say there's a need for a more efficient way to move the ethanol than what is currently done, and as volumes increase, we're going to need more efficiency, that's a clear indication there's a need for a pipeline movement. We then have to determine the operational capability and the viability of putting the ethanol on that pipeline. These are some of the key factors. The fact that Central Florida Pipeline was only 104 miles long, it's a relatively new pipe. It was in 1996. The topography was very flat, one origin, one destination. We said if we couldn't put it on this pipeline, then we really don't think it can happen. We proved it's possible, and now what we're doing is gaining in confidence in all the testing and the lessons we've learned through this, and we are looking at different pipelines, and one of them is in the southeast, the plantation pipeline we are assessing for its viability. We also are evaluating in the West Coast on where it makes the most sense. The last thing is the efficient receipt of product at origin. If you can't get the product there in a very efficient way, you're not gaining a whole lot by moving it by pipeline. Your origin and your destinations are key. On the biodiesel front, what you can see here, this is our plantation pipeline that basically goes from Baton Rouge to Newington, Virginia. The blue section in the middle, we came out June, July 2009, with the capability, we did our tests and put biodiesel on this pipeline system. We have the ability to move about 10,000 barrels a day of a B5 blend, and it has been commercially in commercial operation since July 2009. And we are now looking at an expansion of that going out to the customers with the new RFS2. Is there a need? Within about 6 months, we can go ahead and increase that capacity to handle B5 to 100,000 barrels a day. So again, if the customers, you've seen all the graphs that there is a need to move these products, what we have to do, we come up with the best options. If they are the best options, our customers will go ahead and move on these and support them with long-term agreements. That then allows us to fund them. Key challenges on the biodiesel side, I think we've taken a large step on the clarity of rules and standards. Now it's still to be seen if it can produce this much and maintain the standards of quality across all production in biodiesel. You need to have positive blend economics. You can only do so much pushing of this. It's like our earlier argument on the E85, I think. You push it, you still need the pull, and the positive blend economics were a key reason for the southeast growth, or the growth in the southeast of ethanol blending. And there's still this issue of jet fuel trailback in pipelines. You cannot today move biodiesel on a pipeline that ships jet fuel. So our current two pipelines, we have the plantation pipeline that I showed you earlier, and we have the Portland to Eugene pipeline that is moving biodiesel blends on it in the northwest. Neither one of those has jet fuel on it. I talk about a lot of the challenges here. This is the opportunity. This is the footprint, an unmatched footprint of Kinder Morgan, our pipeline, our terminal assets. We're very excited about now trying to evaluate where and how we can take and put biofuels on these because, again, we match up the commercial need from the customer with our operational capability. And that's what this represents. And again, we thank our customers for your support. Thank you.